Hello, my name's Kate Rowles and I'm interviewing you for the Wellcome Trust as you're taking part in Anthony Gormley's artwork One Another. The date today is the 25th of September 2009 and the time is 4:30 a.m. If I can please ask you to say your full name, your age and where you come from.
My name's Ian Russell and I'm 29 and I come from Belfast in Ireland.
How are you today?
I'm well. Great, a little tired. It's a bit early, but the excitement of getting up on the plinth is keeping me going.
What was it that motivated you to apply to be part of One Another, do you think?
Initially, it was interest in Anthony Gormley's work. I've always been a follower and a fan. And then also, I attracted to the sort of transformative potential of the work, the way it has taken a monumental space that, you know, it was intended to have a static sculpture and then has, you know, in recent times had a series of contemporary but static sculptures and then become something which is living, fluid, and arguably uncontrollable. It's very well organized, but somewhat uncontrollable. And just to get having the opportunity to do that, I was very excited about. I had no idea at the time what I would do, but I figured I'd worry about that if I was given the opportunity.
And how did you decide how you were going to spend your hour?
Oh, well, I was having conversations with a longtime collaborator of mine named Edward Cochrane, and we have done a series of artworks, provocations, you know, just have fun. And while I was talking to him, we were thinking about, you know, just the possibilities and the limitations of the time up there. And the real clincher for us was that it starts at 5, or I'm on at 5 a.m., and there really isn't anybody around. I mean, there are cars driving by, there's security, you know, there's the odd person coming back from the club. But there really isn't much of a present public here. But the unique thing about this project is that it's simultaneously webcast all over the world. And so we were thinking that, well, in developing a project, that it had to be something that could be appreciated in that format, either in an immediate sense globally while it's live cast, or subsequently through some form of archive. So in talking about that, you're probably getting a sense that what we, myself and what Andy and I were thinking about doing was we wanted to create something that you know, was a bit of a, you know, hopefully a gift, something that, you know, contributed to the project, something that, you know, maybe engages with it, causes some questions. But I guess both Andy and myself are academic researchers and art curators. So it was a bit of, we have had a bit of pressure to not just, well, it is being ourselves, but we wanted to use our, you know, professional skills to create something that could be, you know, perhaps more than just maybe me listening to the music that I love or that thing. And there's nothing wrong with that, but we felt that there was some sort of expectation, maybe pressure, to do something like that. So I haven't told you what I'm doing now. I probably should do. So what's going to happen? Let me tell you a different way. The way it developed was, again, talking about the project, we were very interested in how the project, its aspiration is to be public art, but an art of a public, of a group of people. And that Anthony's agency creates the space and then is sort of dispersed through all the participants who then do their different performances or whatnot. And that constitutes said work. And we were interested in sort of the structure of assumptions about how art works or how it's going to be received, perceived, and then later what its legacy may or may not be. Particularly because Trafalgar Square is such a place resonant with history. So it has legacies, it has histories, it has heritages. So whatever we do here is going to engage with that. So being aware of all that, we were interested in how 2,400 people are going to take part in creating an Anthony Gormley work. And that at the end of this, are those people going to be remembered in themselves? Like maybe their works or their moments may be remembered, but we were interested in how 50, 100 years from now, will the plinthers be remembered or will Anthony Gormley be remembered? And I don't know the answer to that, but that was a question we thought was worth asking. So the way we're going to ask that question in about half an hour is we downloaded all of the photos of all the profile pictures of all the plinthers and printed them on Duplo blocks, the big Lego blocks. and we're going to build a photo mosaic live, basically build a big wall of that depicts Anthony Gormley. So it's going to be a picture of Anthony Gormley, a photo mosaic made of all of the pictures of the people who have participated in the project. And that's pretty much it. And we're hoping it's simple. It is supportive and contributes to the project. But you can also question, you know, are all the people in the project being used, or used maybe too strong, but used, or that they're just playing a role as one unit or one pixel to paint, you know, a broader image or meta image of this famous artist's work. And so that's sort of what we're going to do. And it's fun playing with Duplos, and photo mosaics are always pretty satisfying. I know you see them in advertising and whatnot, that sort of way. And it could be interesting. We sort of wondered whether the picture that results, because it is rather iconic, Anthony's actually standing in, it's a photo that Andy took of Anthony standing in the quite iconic and stereotypical pose of Anthony's sculptures, the bronze statues that are all over the world. And so we're wondering whether, although we're, you know, choosing to critically engage with the project, that we may actually just be reifying it and actually presenting both a reification of Anthony, his pose, and the structure of the project itself with, you know, the public, the modes of public representation. So that's, I think that's enough for me. Do you have any other questions for me?
How did you work out how to create the image of Anthony through the images of all the participants?
Like functionally? It's photo mosaic software is pretty regularly available now. I mean, there's different scales and qualities that you can use, and some cost money and some don't. So that was actually pretty straightforward. I mean, Andy and I have done a series of works like this, not specifically, you know, it's not Duplos or anything like that. We've done a series of photo mosaic works, which we've called reflexive representations. We've been doing them for the last three, four years. And because we have an academic background in heritage, archaeology, and museum studies, that they've been photo mosaics of iconic artifacts or iconic archaeologists, you know, or academics. And those images are created from Google image searches for specific words which relate to those images. So the first one that we ever did was of Metope 27 from the British Museum, from the Parthenon. If there's anyone from Greece, from the Parthenon, which happens to be in the British Museum. And it's obviously a piece of contested heritage. And so it's a photo mosaic made of images that come from Google image searches for the words Britain and Greece and Britannia and Elada and Elis, which are the Greek and English words for Britain and Greece. And it just creates this chaotic image that shows the full image of the metope. But shows this clash of expectation about what cultures are. What is it? What does an English person a British person think Britain is, and what does a Greek person think British is? So, like, in the British expectation of themselves, it was like Port Mary in China, you know, and maybe, you know, horses or different things like that. Then in the Greek perception of Britain, it was things like clubbers, like DJs, clubbing. Military, and ironically, American politicians. American politicians showed up for everything because of the recent. I don't want to get political, but you know, the recent relationship between the governments in the UK and the United States. And yeah, it was just interesting. So we've been doing a series of these types of works, and we found them. They've been very effective because they're very simple, and it allows people to sort of, obviously, when you stand far away, you see a pretty interesting image, and then you move in and you see different depths, and you can engage with it in whatever way you want. So as a pedagogical, like a teaching tool, it's worked very well for us in lectures, and occasionally in exhibitions, but nothing too fancy. Like, we wouldn't call ourselves artists. We try to make things to solve, you know, questions that we have.
How are you feeling about standing on the fourth plinth yourself now that you're actually here?
Really excited. I've got my long johns on because I was worried about it being cold. It's actually not cold, so my legs are really hot now. But that's probably the only reservation I've got. I can't believe I'm here. It's you know, it's early in the morning. It's a time when I'm not usually awake. If I am awake, I probably have been up to no good, and now I'm up to, you know, hopefully do something very good. So it's doing it in the middle of the night is actually makes it interesting because it makes it really surreal. And you have to build so much around it to be here, you know, staying up all night, or you know only getting 2 hours sleep or whatever. And everyone, all the staff here is brilliant, because you guys are burning the midnight oil just like us, so we're all in the same boat. Yeah, I'm really excited about it and I can't wait, and I'm sure when I come down I'll just be on cloud nine. I'll probably still feel like I'm still up there when I come down. So I'm just delighted to have the opportunity.
And overall, what kind of experience are you hoping to have by taking part in one another, I think?
Overall, I think, in if I'm being honest with how I first applied to it, is to have one of those once in a lifetime experiences, to get to, you know, experience, you know, a famous location like this from a unique standpoint is just, actually there's a scene, I'm always into cheesy poetry stuff, but there's a scene from Dead Poets Society, this film I still love it, okay, I'll be honest. And Robin Williams, the character he's playing, is Mr. Keating, an English teacher. And he jumps up on his desk, and everyone, they say, why are you standing up there? And one of the, or he says, why am I standing up here? And one of the students says, because you want to feel taller. He goes, no, thanks for playing. He says, I stand up here to remind myself you always have to look at the world in new ways. And then he has the whole class get up and stand on the desk, you know, to look and see the classroom from a new perspective. And then that begins their journey as young, becoming, you know, young men to adults, about thinking about education, what it means to them and their dreams and the way they want their life to be. And actually, it hadn't really occurred to me until I'm telling you right now, but I think that that's exactly what I'm hoping to take away from this, is see things from a little bit of a different perspective, and hopefully that'll inspire me for, if not the whole of my life, you know, for a little while, to give you that lift and a little bit of motivation to, you know, see what's possible with a little bit of creativity and energy and excitement.
Can I ask you to say a little bit about yourself?
Sure. My name's Ian. I've got red hair, and I've got a complex background. I actually grew up in the States, and then I moved to Ireland when I was 18 and went to college. And then for the last 11 years, I've been, we're traveling all over the place, but working between Belfast and Dublin, doing academics, art, theater, whatever, getting involved in projects. I love projects, whatever they may be. So that's sort of what's kicking me. I studied archaeology, but while I was studying archaeology, I worked in art galleries as an art installer, and learning things from artists, I realized that things might not mean what we think they mean. And so I progressively started to question the past and whether it existed, and started to become less concerned about ancient times and more concerned about how we think about time today. And that led me to a passion engagement with the arts in every respect. And if I have any dreams, what I love to do is to take the arts or contemporary arts, or to work in museums or heritage spaces and remind people that they're at contemporary. So just similar to what's happening here, is to take something which is, you know, an old monumental space and realize that it's the decision for it to be a monumental space is a contemporary decision. It's something we make every day as we keep it that way. And that means we can do with that decision what we will. We can change it and remediate it and make new decisions. And I love that creativity. Other things I love fruit. I love running. Anyone who's listening to this that knows me would be like, you didn't a couple of years ago. In the last few years, I've gotten into being fit and enjoy that. Let's see, what else do I enjoy? I love films. I would be a pretty adventurous person, but I would do quite a lot. And a lot of people wonder how I get all the stuff done that I get done. But the secret is I actually spend a lot of time sitting at home watching DVDs. Just for fun. So that's my deep, dark secret. I figure, you know, if it's for the archival purposes, it's always worthwhile putting a deep, dark secret in. And that's... And that. anything else? I don't know, I'm sort of just rambling.
What sparked your move to Ireland?
Oh, adventure. Yeah, I mean, my grandmother was from Brighton, and her father was from Aberdeen, and his father was from Dundee. Anyway, that's the Milnes, A.A. Milne. If anybody wants to think, A.A. Milne is my great-grandfather's cousin, Winnie the Pooh. Blah. So I've always, that's just one, there's another side of my family's Italian and other things. So I'm, I mean, I would see myself as sort of a cosmopolitan. I don't mean that in a cheesy way, but that I've been a lot of places growing up. But I definitely feel like, what's it, like a young American in the sense that, you know, I could only exist because America existed. But I traveled to Europe, I think the first time when I was 12, and went to Denmark, and I just loved it. There's something here that's just so exciting because it is just embedded societies and people, and there's like people have to deal with history, which some people hate and they want to get rid of, but it's there whether or not you like it. If you want to ignore it, you're choosing to ignore it, and I love that. So why I chose Ireland was, I guess it's a twist of fate. A girl I dated had been there had backpacked and gone to Trinity College for the summer and said it was beautiful. I was like, I like beautiful places. And I talked to a couple other people, and I just sort of, that was one of the, an international university I went for. And the clincher was a dean, I can't remember his name, I'm sorry if you ever hear this, a dean of the honors program at University of Wisconsin, which is another school I might have gone to. And he gave me really simple advice. If you get into a university in Ireland, go. Not necessarily because of the university, because living in Ireland, you will see an entire society change. This was in like 1998. And it was just when immigration, it turned from net emigration to net immigration. And then the big boom and everything, you know, and now the big collapse. And it's all these dramatic stories. But you get to watch I got to watch an entire society deal with, you know, massive economic development, arguably the fastest economic development that's ever been seen in the world. And it's really interesting how quickly people can, you know, forget about certain old conflicts or forget about, you know, traditional cultural values or family values or forget about the church or all these different things. And yeah, that was just probably the best education I ever could have gotten. Was just that raw sociological experience, just being somewhat of an outsider, watching the people, engaging, and, you know, yeah, that was, I grew up while, I don't want to say Ireland grew up, because I don't want to be, like, you know, but while the whole country changed, and he was right, he was dead right, and it I think that's what sparked a lot of the interest that I have today. So yeah.
Can you remember how it first felt when you arrived in Ireland?
Oh yeah, I mean the image. It was really dark and it was rainy. It was like 5 a.m. It was a very late flight through New York, and I felt very disillusioned. I had no idea where anything was. I had never been there before I got off the plane to go to college. And I remember going in. My mum was with me, and we went to a bed and breakfast, and dropped our stuff, and then decided we'd walk in to see where college was, and it was pouring rain. We decided still to do it. We were getting soaked and just so soaked, and getting really cratchety, and then having those fights that only a son and a mother could have when they're traveling together. My mom's gonna hate me for saying this stuff, but then we just sort of sucked it up and found a place, hid in, had tea, and I don't want to be too dramatic about it, but yeah, I do remember at that moment kind of one feeling really, really out of place. But then dealing with those sort of sheer elements, the weather like that, and then going in to a warm place to have a cup of tea, and how important and simple that was, all of a sudden I sort of also got something about the place. I grew up in a place that's, I mean, we get all different types of weather, but it's generally quite sunny. It's in the south in the States. And you kind of take that for granted. There's something about living in Northern Europe where the weather's just a little bit off and a little bit rough. That helps people get together, and that's the one thing I would definitely like. Yeah, I would feel Irish in a way that when you live there, you put up with the same things that everybody else puts up with, the politics, you know, the social issues, the economics, all that stuff, but all, like the weather. And these are things that affect everyone's lives. And yeah, there's sort of a bond, I mean, you know, you get when you, God, when you go into the pub and everyone's a bit wet and smells like, you know, moldy, dank wool. And you know, you get a pint and it's fun. You have another pint because it's more fun. You have great chats. And then you have, you know, one more drink to keep you warm for the way home. And it's, and you have to, you just do that. And I yeah, I'm sure I'm rambling about it, but yeah, the darkness when I first got there and the wetness, but then the sort of the feeling of camaraderie that comes from persevering in those conditions, you know. And I think that's not, I don't think that's even unique to Ireland. It's the same every time you come to England. In fact, I think it's very good at persevering in those conditions. So,
can I ask you to describe yourself?
You can ask. I might not know. In any way, physically, intellectually. Myself. I'm a passionate person. I'm a hard worker. Some would say I work too hard. I do too much. But for me, I always feel like it's never enough. I always want a little bit more. Just because you've got one life to live, you know, so go for it. So a bit of a go-getter. I like to think I'm a conscientious person, I'm a considerate person. You know, I love family, I love friends. I do think for me, like family, the joke you say is that family are people that, you know, you can't necessarily choose to love them, you just have to love them, and you do. But friends are people you choose to love, as you would partners, etc. Well, but so friends, I think for me, are very special, because they're those people that you meet on your path and they walk with you everywhere. And I think that's a really special relationship to agree to have that type of person in your life. Like Andy, my collaborator, sure, he got up at 2 a.m. as well, and he's sitting out there on teas and coffees to keep going for my moral support. And like, it's a special person who will do that when they're not even going up on the plinth. You know, that's a really special thing. I've always been an adventurer. I always love adventures. I love projects. I love the idea of creating something new. It doesn't have to be amazing. It doesn't have to be artistic. Just, it could be breakfast. Making a really good breakfast. That's a really special thing. A really good cup of tea, actually. That's one thing I need to perfect. I'm not very good at making cups of tea. Yeah, but my friends are. And so I probably should. Maybe it's because I'm a little bit, I don't rush, but sometimes, because I'm doing so much, I sometimes forget to pay attention to certain little details. But then I got my mates to remind me and look after me when that happens. Is that a good enough picture? I've got red hair, I'm a ginger, if that helps. I don't know what that means.
What's important to you in your life at the moment?
Oh, right now? Well, I'm delighted that I just, you know, that I got a job offer. So that's probably the biggest thing. It's a little bit going a different direction. It's for Brown University in the States for the public humanities program, and I'll be doing heritage studies and art curation, which is cool. I'm really excited about it. If you'd asked me like 2 months ago, it would have been unemployment. So those were key issues. I know it's something everybody's talking about right now, but that's been something that's been, you know, a primary issue for the last while. Yeah, and then other thing is having as much fun as possible. I did a PhD young. I finished my PhD when I was 26, which was great, but then I sacrificed my 20s to really intense, isolating work, which I'm glad I got it and I got out of the way, and I'm delighted my life's great. But I do feel like I didn't get to do a lot of the stuff that, or make a lot of the mistakes that people get to make and figure things out. Parallel to having interesting work and all that sort of stuff is I also am trying to have interesting fun. So those are probably the two main things at the moment.
And is there anything else that you would like to add about yourself or about taking part in one another? One question I like to ask is, who are you doing this for?
Ooh, the world. Yeah, in a way, posterity. I'm trying to think about, you know, what the legacy of the project is going to be. And you know, in the nature of what the work that I'm realizing on the plinth is I would like it to be, you know, for the plinthers in a way. I do think it's a very special opportunity that we've all gotten to be up here, and I'd like to contribute to thinking about what that means. And in a way, it's also for Anthony. If you listen to this, I've not met you properly. Andy has. I know you work very well, so I'm hoping it makes him smile. That would be. I'm sure he sees many things that make him smile. But it'd be great if this made it across his, you know, morning table when he's having a coffee or whatever, having breakfast, and people are like, oh, did you hear what happened last night? And then maybe that make you know makes him a little bit happier about the project that he's done.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thank you.